are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, it's a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host David Ramil. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the officially washed Carmelo Anthony, the Admiral Damian Lillard, and the injured Lonzo Ball. But let's start in Philadelphia, where the 76ers clobbered the Houston Rockets 121-93. They didn't have Jimmy Butler, but they did have Corey Brewer, freshly signed to a 10-day contract, who seemed to get under James Harden's skin early on with some of his antics. Harden did finish with 37 points in three quarters, making it his 20th straight game with at least 30 points, something no one else but Wilt Chamberlain has done. But he didn't get the win. That goes to the Sixers, and even though Harden has been ridiculous lately, teams are starting to figure out how to limit him a little bit, or at least take some things away, David.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that there isn't much to compliment James at this point, and so it's easy to focus on him and make things difficult for him, knowing that he's not going to get bailed out. Earlier on with Chris Paul in the lineup, with Clint Capella particularly, the way he was playing most of the season, you could have to focus on other, you know, starters there alongside Harden. But now, knowing these injuries have set in, knowing that Eric Gordon isn't the player he was the last couple of seasons in Houston, it's easier to target Harden, to limit his playmaking ability, and to try and just harass him. I mean, Corey Brewer did a fantastic job, as you pointed out, of getting under his skin. And that kind of physicality is going to take its toll on Harden as the season continues. We've talked about this before on this show, that exhaustion seems like it's likely to set in, if not during the regular season, certainly by the time the playoffs roll around, and that's a concern for Houston fans. And I think these kinds of antics, while they seem maybe a little odd during the regular season, maybe a little unnecessary, they're effective because he's going to get drained. He's going to have problems trying to find his offense. He's going to continue to get into these little battles and have to find another way to take it to a yet another level that he's not capable of reaching at this point. Just because he's been so dominant of late, I don't know that there's another place for him to reach and in order to carry this team even further than they're you know, that he's already carried them. So it's going to be a concern to see how Harden responds and more importantly, how the rest of the starting lineup does. And I'm not so sure that there's a clear answer there.
Yeah, you mentioned Chris Paul hasn't played in almost a whole month dealing with this hamstring issue. And I know Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle has basically reported that he could be back by the end of the week. But it kind of feels like they keep pushing this back, this potential return date for Chris Paul, by a couple of days all the time. And they really need him, because you look up and down this roster and you're right, there's just not another guy. I mean, you can, like, Kenneth Faried, who, by the way, played his first game with the Rockets after managing to get bought out by the Nets, like, perfect timing. Amazing how that happened. 13 points on 5-7 field goals, but, you know, he's not going to be your second scorer. Gerald Green was the next best scorer for the Rockets behind Harden. He had 18 points. It took him 16 field goal attempts. He went 2-9 from three-point range. I mean, yeah, 18 points, great. But if you're not going to be efficient, the entire Rockets offense revolves around the idea of efficiency. And so you need just one other guy. And Eric Gordon, his struggles have obviously hurt Chris Paul. Obviously, that injury has been tough. And James Harden can only do so much. And to me, what sticks out is, yeah, 37 points, great. Wilt Chamberlain, yeah, awesome. He had 3 assists and he had 6 turnovers. That's a really bad ratio, David. And I just, if nobody else is going to step up, and this seems to be what teams are doing against the Rockets, you kind of take away the left side of the floor against James Harden. You just play up on him. Just get your arms up in his face and just try to annoy him and just make passing really hard. And just accept the fact that he's probably going to draw a foul on you. He's probably going to blow by you. He's probably going to get you with that step back every once in a while. It's going to happen, but just try to take away those passing lanes the best you can. And teams are starting to do that a little bit more, even trying to take away one whole side of the floor. So it's been tough. And now Houston has lost 5 of their last 9. And again, as good as Harden has been, and as good as the Rockets have got, like, as much as the Rockets have gotten better, like, it's still the Western Conference, and nothing's for certain. And it just feels like they need to add somebody to this mix sooner rather than later, whether it's coming back from injury or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that there's a clear solution there. Maybe Chris Paul comes back and is able to help provide some balance in that starting lineup. At the same time, though, you could continue to do what you did for Harden against Paul as well. You can make things difficult for Chris Paul and challenge him physically and see how he responds. I mean, Paul's savvy enough where he can draw fouls on his own. He draws a lot of contact himself. But at the same time, at his age, I'm wondering whether or not if you can apply that same kind of physicality, whether or not that might either aggravate his injury or even take him out further as his skills continue to decline. So
and it wasn't like he was lighting it up before he got injured either, right?
Right.
And I think the other part of this game, we should talk about the team that won, was the Sixers. Corey Brewer, again, just signed a 10-day deal, playing like a dude who just signed a 10-day deal and wants to extend and wants to be on the Sixers for longer than just a couple of weeks here. He was playing like, you know, when you're like in a fighting game and you're just smashing buttons and you just got limbs flying all over the place. That was Corey Brewer tonight. I mean, he was awesome. He was doing his best Marcus Smart impression, like just getting under Harden's skin, like getting up into his face, like just audaciously flopping just to annoy Harden. It was great. I loved it.
Former teammates, too. I mean, I wonder how much of that played a factor in Brewer's attack or system, you know, because he certainly knew how to get under Harden's skin. Look, I mean, we're overstating things a little bit because, again, Harden did have this huge stat line, but it's easy to allow him to get all these points knowing that you're not going to get contributions from anybody else. And as far as Brewer's concerned, he did play him very, very well and made things, you know, difficult a little bit. And you're right about giving some attention to Philadelphia, though. They had a pretty solid game, and they were without Jimmy Butler, weren't they?
They were without Jimmy Butler. And look, Joel Embiid only took one three-pointer in the game. He thrived, 32 points, 14 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists, 2 steals. He was a plus 21 on the box score. Is this a thing? Should we read into this? Because I feel like all the talk shows tomorrow are going to say, is Joel Embiid better without Jimmy Butler? I think that's where this is going.
I still feel that there's a way of incorporating their big three there. Like, I think they've got enough offense from other players there, J.J. Redick, et cetera. At the same time, I feel like the, you know, Simmons, Butler, and Embiid trio can find a way to coexist. It's not easy. I mean, I don't think anybody assumed that they were going to mesh instantly. Maybe it'll take more time than they actually have. Maybe it's not about this season as much as maybe you look at Philadelphia and this big acquisition of Butler earlier in the year as a title-contending move. Maybe it's not realistic to think of it that way, and maybe the reality is that they're not going to get better until they have more time getting used to each other's traits, you know, the way that they prefer to score, etc. I mean, Butler is an all-consuming presence, and it's hard not to, you know, incorporate that somehow and not to find a way to adjust. And maybe it's not as easy as you'd think, and I think that's could be a big story, but the reality is ultimately this team is still better with Jimmy Butler in the lineup.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, and I think you look at teams in the past, it takes a while. Not everything is the Golden State Warriors where everybody is an all-world shooter and it just kind of clicks instantly. You know, even like the DeMarcus Cousins thing recently, like it just kind of works already because DeMarcus Cousins hits 3 of his 4 three-point attempts in his first appearance in over a year. Like, you just can't do that everywhere, and so I think it's going to take a little bit of a time. That said, watching that game, it was a little, I do think it helped a little bit not having to worry about kind of a third star to feed. And Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid were able to just sort of do what they did for like the last couple of years. And I think that there's a comfort zone, and I think that that is beneficial in the short term. But ultimately, I don't know that the not having Jimmy Butler helps their ceiling in the long term. Has Carmelo Anthony played his last NBA game? Or will he sign somewhere and contribute? We'll talk about that after this break. Let's get to some headlines from around the NBA, and we'll start in Houston, where the Rockets are making some moves. After waiving guard James Nunnally and signing Kevin Fareed, who played 23 minutes last night, the Rockets are trading Carmelo Anthony and some cash to the Chicago Bulls. Now, Carmelo won't play for Chicago, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, and the Bulls will eventually trade or waive him, but not immediately. Melo is now the dude that teams pay to get off of their teams, David. Is this the end for Carmelo Anthony's NBA career? Or is there a reunion with LeBron James in his future?
Well, I mean, the Lakers have interest, and I think as long as there's interest, there's a place for Carmelo Anthony in this league. The reality, as much as fans and pundits like us look at Anthony's decline, I think there's still such a high level of respect among his peers in the league. I think he's still a guy that other players value. And you saw this in even in his short debacle of a stint in Houston, where a number of players around the league came to you know, Anthony's defense and pointed out that the franchise was doing him wrong, that the Rockets did him dirty by not keeping him on, by keeping him on the roster, by not trading him outright, by not finding a way to incorporate Anthony's talent. So I'm not sure what they're seeing that's different than what everybody else sees, but there's a place for Carmelo Anthony in the league, I think, for as long as he wants one. And I'm not so sure Los Angeles is the best place for him, obviously. I mean, look, LeBron's going to come back. Where does Carmelo fit in that lineup? He's not going to be a starter. He'll come off the bench. And if that's the case, right, maybe he can provide a scoring punch there. But I'm not even sure, you know, if he's taking away minutes from some of these younger players that still need to find a way to develop. Is he cutting into Michael Beasley's minutes, maybe? I mean, I don't know what
to I think that's of. What I think he – I think he would take Michael Beasley's minutes. But Michael Beasley wasn't getting any minutes before LeBron got hurt. And so once LeBron comes back, if you give Melo Beasley's minutes, once LeBron's back, he still has no minutes. And so – I don't know who they get rid of, to your point there. And Woj did add, like, the Lakers aren't planning to waive anybody to make room for Carmelo Anthony. And maybe that'll be a sticking point between LeBron James and the front office in the future coming up. But would they trade somebody for Melo? Like, would it take an asset plus Melo to get even just a roster player from the Lakers? Like, do you just get rid of one of, like, the lowest of the low roster, like the 14th or 15th guy, like an Isaac Bonga or whoever, like that they drafted, like who doesn't play for them? Like, I don't know. Like, it's probably not worth trading anybody that they have. Like, even Zubac, who I thought, like, a lot of Lakers fans sort of pointed to when this Melo to Lakers thing kind of started happening months ago. He's like, oh yeah, get rid of Zubac. He's playing behind McGee. He's playing behind Tyson Chandler. He doesn't play, but he's been, like, super good for them lately. And you're not gonna get rid of Zubac for Melo. So I don't know who the guy is that they get rid of. I don't know, and if it's not the Lakers, I don't know where he's going.
That's a good point.
Because he probably wants to contend, and he probably wants to play if he's not contending. Like, unless there's some sort of – unless, like, the Wizards are like, let's just super tank and let's just sign Carmelo Anthony and just, like, really make it look like we're trying, but we're actually really tanking. Like, that's the only thing I could think of. Like, I don't know where the other spot for him is. So I'm not sure. I'm not so sure. Like, this could be the last time we see Carmelo Anthony. I wouldn't be shocked, so to speak. So let's go to Portland, where Damian Lillard recently told The Athletic that he recognized the Trailblazers aren't as talented as the top teams in the West, like the Warriors or the Thunder, but doesn't want to shake up the team's chemistry for just a marginal upgrade, adding, I want to win a championship for the city, but I'm not willing to put somebody under the bus to do it. It's certainly admirable of Lillard to say that, but it also roughly translates to me, David, as go big or go home to the front office.
Meaning that they have to make major trades and acquire another complimentary superstar alongside Lillard?
Yeah, like, don't go get me Marco Bellinelli. That's not going to help. Like, you know what I mean? Like, go get, like, either get me another top 10 player or don't worry about it. Like, don't waste your time.
So how is that admirable? I'm just trying to figure that out because, I mean,
I think it sounds admirable.
Yeah, I mean, he's still saying, look, I'll trade half the roster so long as you can get me Jimmy Butler or whomever, you know.
I should add that Jason Quick, the writer for The Athletic who said this, who wrote this piece and talked with Damian Lillard about it, like, he said Lillard has not asked the organization to make any trades whatsoever. So I should add that. But it kind of does ring, like, Damian Lillard's like, don't waste your time. It kind of sounds smart to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Look, we've heard a lot of stories and we've seen a lot of evidence that Lillard is a pretty good leader in that clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He does a good job of trying to get everybody together. Even in the wake of their sweep at the hands of the Pelicans last playoffs, that, you know, he's the one that kept them all together. He's the one that said, you know what, we can find a way to bounce back where other teams would have kind of eating themselves in from the inside. Lillard was able to kind of keep them focused on finding a way to progress. Ultimately, you know, maybe this team, like he said, is not as talented as others, But there's good chemistry there. They're hoping for some more internal development. And they're finally starting to see it. Guys like Yusuf Nurkic have stepped up quite a bit lately. And surprisingly, Jake Layman is providing a factor. He's been a factor for them in that starting lineup, spacing the
Layman floor. Sanity.
I'm not so sure if I'm ready to put it just there yet. But at the same time, he's adding a spark. They had a big win against the Utah Jazz tonight. And, as long as they continue to get complimentary support from other players, maybe they can have a slightly deeper run. Ultimately, I'm not so sure what this team's ceiling is, but it might be deeper than it even was last year.
Because they're not relying on McCollum as much. They've got these other, like Nurkic is maybe even arguably their second best player right now, or at least has been this season.
Yeah, he had a big one.
McCollum's starting to turn it around a little bit, but Portland, like, they're 10 games over 500 right now. They're 7-3 in their last 10. And if you look at the top crust of the Western Conference, it's obviously Golden State and Denver as the two 30-plus win teams. Oklahoma City's got 28, and Portland's got 29. They're right behind them.
Yeah.
And behind those four is the Houston Rockets, who we just talked about. They might be struggling a little bit. And then after that, like, it's like a crapshoot of Western Conference teams. So Portland they're separating themselves. And that's good, but also we've seen the Trailblazers do this before, right? In the regular season. This is a good regular season team that, like you said, struggles in the playoffs. They got swept by the Pelicans in the first round last year. So they still have, I think, the same issues that hurt them last year. They don't really have that third creator, even though Nurkic is doing some of that out of the post, and he's been like a really good passer for them. But ultimately what that adds up to is I kind of agree with Dame. Like, what trade are you going to make that is, like, don't trade away one of these guys because we got a good thing going on. We're starting to click here. And unless it's for something that's going to clearly upgrade this roster. In other news around the league, Lonzo Ball is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a left ankle sprain that he suffered during the Lakers' loss to the Rockets on Sunday. Comes at a time when LeBron and Rondo are both cleared to resume full contact practice after missing the last 14 games. So tough news for the Lakers. Seemed like they were starting to get healthy, and now with Lonzo being out, that could have been the boost they needed. And then in Dallas, Dennis Smith Jr. will rejoin the Mavericks as both sides try to protect his value. That is according to ESPN's Tim McMahon, who adds, it's unlikely that the Mavericks find a deal that it likes for DSJ before the trade deadline. We've got our Locked On Line of the Night coming up next. Before we get to our Locked On Line of the Night, let's check in on the other scores from Monday.
In the first game of the day, it was a busy slate of games. The Thunder went to New York and never trailed, beating the Knicks 127-109. Paul George had 31 points. Zach LaVine scored 25 as the Bulls beat the Cavs 104-88 in a game nobody saw. Everybody eats in Washington as the Wizards had six different players score in double digits, including 120 points for Trevor Ariza as they beat the Pistons 101-87. Luka Doncic became the second youngest player ever to record a triple-double, but the Mavericks lost to the Bucks 116-106, although Giannis Antetokounmpo had 31 points and 15 rebounds. The Magic ended a five-game losing streak on the road, beating the Atlanta Hawks 122-103. Brooklyn outscored Sacramento 68-34 after halftime, including a 30-9 fourth quarter as the Nets beat the Kings 123-94 to win their fourth straight. No Anthony Davis, no problem, as the Pelicans beat the Grizzlies 105-85 without their star player. Kyrie Irving put up 26 points, 10 assists, 8 steals to lead the Celtics past the Heat 107-99. Despite Donovan Mitchell scoring the last 14 points for the Jazz to cut a 12-point Blazers lead to 4 with 41 seconds left, it wasn't enough as Utah falls to Portland 109-104, and the Golden State Warriors blow out the Lakers 130-111 behind 44 points from Klay Thompson.
He made his first 10 three-pointers, Klay Thompson did, and that leads us to our Locked On Line of the Night. Some good options to pick from, David. I mentioned Klay, 44 points, 10 of 11 on those three-pointers. I can't believe he took that 11th one. He made his first 10. The Warriors get the win. Donovan Mitchell, 36 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, including those last 14 points, like you mentioned, in the Utah Jazz's loss to Portland. Kyrie Irving, 26 points, 10 assists, and 8 steals in their win over the Heat. Joel Embiid had 32 points, 14 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. Paul George, 31 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. And then D'Angelo Russell, who is getting in this Locked On Line of the Night conversation more and more, 31 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, a steal, and a block. David, what's your Locked On Line of the Night?
It's a tough one. You know, you have to give some credit to Donovan Mitchell for having a big game there, although it wasn't a losing effort. You know, Paul George had a pretty good stat line, but it was against the Knicks, so it's basically the same thing as playing against no one. But I've got to give the credit to Joel Embiid. Look, it was a big win. The Houston Rockets might be faltering a little bit, but they found a way to exist, to find a way to really beat them down. And look, you know, without Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, maybe he seemed a little bit more comfortable without Butler in the lineup. Who knows? Still, it was a really big night for him. And a powerful reminder that Embiid is still one of the top players in the league. He's probably not in the MVP consideration. He's not in the MVP race, I think, by most people's accounts, because he has struggled to find his place alongside Butler. But this is a strong indicator that he's still capable of really huge stat lines, and it was a good showing from him.
Yeah, when you get these nights where Embiid is just physically dominant and there's like nothing you can do about it, it's a lot of fun to watch, and there's not a whole lot of guys that can sort of mimic that. You know what I mean? And that's why he draws so many of those Shaq comparisons. And that was very much like that. And he got under Harden's skin a little bit too. He's getting into fights with Westbrook, getting into fights with James Harden. I kind of like it. I like this. It's a nice little flavor to the league. It's some spiciness. but I'm going with Klay Thompson. First of all, he was the leading scorer on the night, 44 points, the only player to eclipse that 40-point mark. And he did it by hitting his first 10 three-pointers. That ties an NBA record. That's crazy. So he definitely, and he probably only dribbled like negative three times. Like, it's just, it's crazy how he could do this. And he's refound his shooting stroke, which is a lot of fun. And it just sort of unlocks everything that the Warriors do. And they're rolling right now. The Warriors are. Like, when Klay is going, they don't even need DeMarcus Cousins. They were rolling before Cousins came back. And I think this is their eighth straight win. And it's a lot. Has to do a lot with Klay Thompson refinding that three-point shooting stroke.
Yeah, wasn't it just a few weeks ago when we were all talking about Klay struggling and wondering whether or not he was going to find a way to jumpstart that offense, and whether or not the Warriors were finally showing signs of weakness and everything else? I think we might have been overstating those concerns just a little bit.
Finally, we've got four games tonight. The Trailblazers and the Thunder are on NBA TV. We've got Kings, Raptors, Clippers versus Mavericks, and the late game between the Timberwolves and Suns. David, which one are you watching?
I think the game of the night is probably the Blazers at Thunder. Both teams coming off games on Martin Luther King Day. They should be a little tired, but the Thunder, they play such great defense. Paul George is playing at an MVP level. I'm curious to see how the Blazers respond after a really good showing against Utah, whether or not they're still able to get that kind of great effort from some of their role players like Nurkic, Layman, and others. So that should be the fun game of the night.
I've got Kings-Raptors. Both teams are rested. Well, not really. Like, the Kings are sort of rested. How does that work? Because they played, like, in the afternoon. I don't know. But De'Aaron Fox versus that Raptors defense, I'm in. Like, I'll watch and see what happens. So that's where I'm going with my TV. That's all we have for today. Make sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. And remember that you can listen to the show by telling your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. We'll be back here next Tuesday. You can catch us over at Locked On Heat for the rest of the week. Thanks for listening.